This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
On the program today, what a difference a date makes. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday, today the 25th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. And we begin on this Thursday with perhaps the most vexing question in this economy right now. What do you mean, Janet Yellen, that you don't know exactly when that X date is going to hit? Quote, potentially as early as June 1st is the most precise estimate we've gotten from the Secretary of the Treasury, on which a whole lot hinges, as we all know. And yes, sure, government finances are complicated, but it is a little disconcerting not to have a better sense of when catastrophe might strike. So, Marketplace's Justin Ho is on the Why Is This So Hard desk today.
First of all, let's try to give the government a break here. It spends trillions of dollars every year on everything from Social Security and veterans benefits to defense contractors and desk chairs at the IRS. So at any given time, it's hard to know exactly how much money it's paying out.
We're talking about something like over 80 million checks that are transacted on a monthly basis. It is simply impossible to be exact.
That's Bill Hoagland with the Bipartisan Policy Center. He says that's just what the government spends money on. Veronique Desrougies, the Mercatus Center, says we also have to keep in mind all the different ways the government brings money in.
Income tax, payroll tax, it's all the many revenue sources that are flowing into Treasury at any given day.
If that revenue doesn't cover all the checks the government has to write, the government has a couple of cushions, says Mark Goldwine at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget.
First, they hold cash. And secondly, they issue bonds. They issue debt to bring in more cash.
And that brings us to the Treasury's problem today. We hit the debt limit in January, so the government can't issue more bonds. As a result,
we're down to only the cash on hand and what we're bringing in on a daily basis.
And right now, what we're bringing in is especially hard to predict. Alex Arnon with the Penn Wharton budget model says it's been an unusual tax season. For one, the stock market wasn't so hot last year, so tax revenue on those investments fell by more than expected. The IRS also extended tax filing deadlines for people affected by severe weather, like the recent flooding on the West Coast.
A huge number of taxpayers, especially almost all California taxpayers, they were not actually required to file in April.
Arnon says there is one glimmer of hope. Corporate tax payments are due on June 15th.
On the Treasury end, they'll get a big influx of revenue and they can use that to fund at least, you know, the next week or two.
But Arnon says it's still unclear whether the government can make it to June 15th before running out of cash. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Seems kind of far away, June 15th. Does on Wall Street today, debt limit talks? What debt limit talks? We'll have the details when we do the numbers.
We'll be right back.
In other debt limit news, the ratings agency Fitch put the United States on what's called watch negative last night, putting our AAA credit rating at risk the closer we get to that X date without a deal. So with that in mind, we are going to talk credit ratings for a little bit with Atzi Sheth. She's the global head of credit strategy and research at Moody's, which is another one of the big three credit rating agencies. Thanks for coming on.
Glad to be here.
In the most basic layperson terms, could you help us understand why we have credit ratings?
Sure. So in the most basic terms, a credit rating is really an opinion on the credit quality of any entity that borrows on the debt capital markets. And what the rating does is tells any investor that wants to invest in that entity how relatively risky that entity is. And we tell them this through a rating scale, with AAA being the least risky and C at the bottom of the scale being highly risky and likely to be in default very soon.
Okay. Now, nuts and bolts on the inside, how does it work? You I imagine, have a whole room, many rooms full of people generating the material by which these opinions, these credit ratings get issued.
Sure. So, you know, we've been doing this, the company that I work for has been doing this for about 100 years. And what we've learned is that there are certain things that determine your level of risk as a debt issuer. If you're an auto company, there's a whole set of aspects that define what will make you more or less risky. If you're a country, there's a different set of methodologies. That's the analytic framework. Mm-hmm. Then we have people that monitor each entity that we rate on a daily basis. And when they see something that's happening in that, at that entity's, either if it's a company on their balance sheet or their profits, that might change their credit worthiness, we have a rating committee. You know, it's people that come from all over the world that are experts in that particular sector. And they discuss and we provide a rating after that.
So do you all just get on some giant Zoom and discuss the creditworthiness of I don't know, the Ford Motor Company or the Acme Widget Company or, oh, just for instance, the United States of America?
We do indeed. Huh. And before Zoom, we did that on the telephone. Wow. But Zoom makes it much easier.
I imagine there's a lot of body language that goes into this, just sort of randomly thinking.
Indeed. And that's, you know, and these are very robust discussions. What we want is a lot of different opinions coming in so that the rating that we finally put out really reflects a range of views and is really robust to all kinds of challenges and, you know, things that the entity might face.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so to the news, right? There was the news from Fitch last night about the United States and how it's thinking about things. And obviously, I don't expect you to deliver on this program unless you would care to a comment on the downgrade of American debt. But how are you thinking about all of that?
Sure. You know, the one word that I'd emphasize in terms of ratings is that they are a relative assessment of credit risk. So we rate the United States at AAA. And this means that we do not believe that there is a high risk. In fact, we believe there's the lowest risk. This is, you know, a huge economy, very dynamic. It has the wherewithal to repay debt. The reason we're talking about credit risk now or default risk now is the debt ceiling. Our view is that this will be a very, very noisy process, but in the end, Congress will come together such that the U.S. and the Treasury will be able to make their debt payments.
What you're saying is that they're going to fix it because they have to, as opposed to reading the politics of the situation.
No, I would say the politics are very, very important. The politics are what makes it so noisy. So, you know, you've had the debt limit in place, you know, for almost 100 years, you know.
More than.
But it has gotten more and more noisy and more contentious as politics have become more polarized. And that is indeed a risk. What we do think is, one, it's been noisy. Sometimes we've gone down to the wire, but ultimately a solution has been found. So that's one track record. The second, we do believe that there's a recognition among politicians who disagree on almost everything, many things, but they do agree that a debt default would be very, very painful for their constituents.
As long as we're on that, and since you're the trained observer in this conversation, how painful?
Well, in a number of ways. So if we come to June 1 without an agreement in place, the Treasury might have to decide to make certain payments and not others. We expect debt payments to be those certain payments, but the ones that are not paid will hurt the individuals, the households, or companies that are not paid. It'll hurt them. In the event of a default, which again, I should reiterate, we don't expect, financial markets would become so volatile. And because this has never happened, it's very hard to predict what that would mean for interest rates, for the dollar, for liquidity. And that would just have wide-ranging effects, even to people who are not owed any money from the government.
Mm-hmm. Asi Sheth, she is the Global Head of Credit Strategy and Research at Moody's, very much on the news of the moment. Ms. Sheth, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
The writer's strike is now in its 24th day, and there really aren't any signs it's going to end anytime soon. And while filming here in Los Angeles is way down, basically half the level last week from a year ago, the entertainment industry is, of course, more than just Los Angeles, and there are people and businesses being affected all over the country, as we will hear in today's installment of our series, My Economy.
I am Kenya Morgan, and I live in Atlanta, Georgia, actually technically Decatur suburb, and I am a costume coordinator in Atlanta's thriving film and television industry. As a costume coordinator, I ensure that bills are paid for our department and PAs are given instruction and direction. It takes an army to make a lot of these productions happen, be that army 10 people or 75 people. I look at it this way, the costume designer is kind of the head of the octopus, and all of us are the arms. As of today, we are partway through a production shutdown, because we are one of the productions in Atlanta that were directly affected by the writer's strike. So what's happening now is we are packing up and prepping to turn the lights off temporarily until we're back. We have a handful of other crew that are still in the department that are, you know, packing up the rentals, making sure everything is put away, everything is documented correctly. So it's very similar. It is eerily similar to a regular production wrap, only as I coined it last week, this is the rehearsal wrap. Me personally, my last day is June 16th. I was not in this industry in 2007, the last time there was a writer's strike. It could be, you know, it could be weeks, it could be months. I have absolutely no idea. My good fortune has been to kind of leapfrog. So once one show ends, I've already got the next show in the works. This, we shall see. And I've got my fingers crossed. I do not regret coming into this industry at all. Not even when I'm worried, oh no, what if someone doesn't hire me? That could keep me up at night, and sometimes it does. But in general, I feel I'm where I should be. I came out of corporate. I would not trade back to that for anything.
Kenya Morgan, she's a costume coordinator in television and film in Atlanta. Wherever you are, whatever you do, we want to hear how it's going. Marketplace.org/myeconomy is where you can do that. Coming up.
So I have a lot of swag from colleges.
What was the price tag for that swag, though, by the way? First, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials down 35 today, about a 10%, 32,764. The NASDAQ climbed 213 points, 1.7%, closed at 12,698. The S&P 500 added 36 points, about 0.8%, 41.51. The NASDAQ gains, by the way, look up NVIDIA, NVDA, up 24% today. More about that later. Whether you are toasting good news, just trying to relax, or having a tough week, you might appreciate the day. Today is National Wine Day. So let's have a look at some publicly traded wine producers. See how they're doing. LVMH, which owns some premium French champagne houses, ticked up 0.75% today, representing American wines, the Duckhorn portfolio. Ticker symbol, anybody? It's a little tricky, but it's pretty obvious. Napa, NAPA, dipped 1.8%. Vintage Wine Estates is down 0.9%. Bonds fell, yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 3.82%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. We get a read on big picture economic growth three times for any given quarter. We get a quick estimate the month after the quarter ends. We get a revised update 2 months after the quarter in question ends, and then a final look 3 months on. That may be more than you wanted to know about how we get GDP, but I mention it because this morning brought us the revised look, that is the second estimate of economic growth in this country January through March. The Bureau of Economic Analysis says GDP grew 1.3% in Q1, that is annualized, of course, and it is down from 2.6% at the end of last year. Also down, corporate profits for the second quarter in a row. Marketplace's Samantha Fields reads the corporate economic tea leaves.
The Fed has been trying to slow the economy to bring inflation down for a while now.
At some point, one has to expect this to start working.
Matthew Spiegel at Yale School of Management says we're getting more signs lately that it is working.
Slow down the economy, by definition, is businesses are not going to have profits as high as they had before.
So is this good then, that corporate profits are down?
Well, it depends on who you are. Everything in economics depends on who you are.
If you're a corporation, you probably don't love that profits fell in the first quarter.
But a 5.1% decline in profits is not all that big in the grand scheme of things.
Brian Bethune is an economics professor at Boston College.
It could have been a lot worse.
For what it's worth, that seems to be how the stock market is taking it too, says Bruce Sacerdote, an economics professor at Dartmouth.
The stock market is already looking over this valley to the next hill. And so the stock market is not freaked out about this.
And the rest of us shouldn't be either, he says. If anything, there may be a silver lining here for many people.
Maybe all the interest rate hikes that the Fed is putting us through are having in part the desired effect. And so therefore, maybe they'll have to face less inflation at the grocery store and the gas pump. And that's a good thing.
Ultimately, Brett House at Columbia Business School says this decline in corporate profits may also signal something of a return to pre-pandemic normal.
I think it's part of a broader rebalancing. After some very high corporate profits, we're seeing them come down.
And overall, he says, the economy is still looking relatively resilient to what has been a fast pace of interest rate hikes.
And whether you define a soft landing as a mild recession or very weak positive growth, we are getting close to what could be a soft landing.
But, he says, if Congress and the White House fail to reach a deal to raise the debt ceiling, that soft landing will be out the window. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Corporate profits are one way to track where the economy might be going. Bonds are another. We talk about that every now and then. Oil, for sure. Also, copper. It's used widely, shall we say, and its price can be a pretty good barometer. And over the past 6 weeks or so, it has kind of been flashing red, down more than 10%. Marketplace's Lily Jamali has that one.
The story with copper, simply put, is too much supply and not enough demand. And China, which uses half the world's supply, is a big part of that story.
They've been building real estate ferociously for decades, it seems like, and they simply have enough stock now.
Chris Bataille, an adjunct research fellow at Columbia's Center on Global Energy Policy, says as growth pulls back,
they don't need to keep building infrastructure and all the wiring and everything that goes with that.
Rising interest rates are contributing to weaker demand around the world. Traders are seeing that reflected in rising stockpiles of copper. Philip Strebel, chief market strategist at Blue Line Futures, has been keeping a close eye on them.
For 23 consecutive days now, there has been an inflow of copper, so the inventories are building.
Strebel says the market's dour now, but he sees opportunity down the road.
It could take months for a bottom to form, but we think ultimately it's going to take off to the upside. There's just so much infrastructure that needs to be replaced and improved on.
Here in the U.S., that includes improvements to the grid as electrification takes off and renewables gain more market share. Meanwhile, while China's slowing down, India may be on its way up, says Eli Tesfaye, senior market strategist at RJO Futures.
Infrastructure is going to be an investment area for Indian government. Maybe there would be the catalyst for global economic improvement.
Which means the long-term prognosis for Dr. Copper could be looking up. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
We've been talking about student debt and how much of it there is in this economy, something more than $1.6 trillion, according to the Congressional Research Service. We've been talking about that for a while now. Here is another data point, this one from the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center. This spring, there were a bit more than 14 million undergraduates in this country. That's about 9% fewer than there were in 2019. And with the understanding that correlation is not causation, you don't have to squint too hard to see that more would-be college students are thinking about the would-be costs. That, the lure of a job market that's really hot on the lingering effects of a pandemic, does have people wondering whether they really need a college degree. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports.
For this year's high school seniors, the pandemic started in the spring of their ninth grade year. That means it was the meat in the sandwich of their high school education. And it affected what they want.
They want to be on their own. They want to pay their own bills.
Mark Dahl counsels students at Niagara Falls High School in Western New York. The senior class here is usually between 400 to 500 kids. In 2019, nearly three quarters of them planned to go to college. Last year, that dropped to around half.
I think a lot of times kids go to college just to go to college, and we're just not sure. And they don't finish their first year.
Part of Dahl's work is to introduce students to career options that don't require more school. He takes them to visit local employers, including the one around the area's famous natural wonder, which many of them have never visited.
We've taken kids out on the Maid of the Mist last year down at Niagara Falls. We talk about jobs in the tourist industry.
There's research from Georgetown that looks at good jobs you can get without a BA, with salaries starting around $38,000. The data also shows you're more likely to get one of those jobs if you do have a bachelor's degree. And in some places, most students want to get one. That's true at Stuyvesant, a famously competitive public high school in New York City. Jeff Macris is the director of college counseling there. At the end of a recent school day, he'd just finished a student meeting in his office, where he's surrounded by pennants and mascots.
So I have a lot of swag from colleges, posters, flags, some other little trinkets. Rice has that little foldable owl, which you can see back here.
Macris says conversations about the price of college are much more common than when he started counseling back in the late 90s.
People kind of didn't realize how costly student debt could be, and it's not just magically going to fix itself 20 years down the road.
Macris says 97% of Stuyvesant graduates go on to higher education. The school doesn't track how many finish. Across the country, about a third of the students who start college don't graduate within 6 years. Some end up with debt and no degree. And now many students who had their high school experience interrupted by the pandemic are calculating things differently. That's true for 19-year-old Aiden Coldsmith. He finished high school in Baltimore in 2021, then enrolled in a business program at a public university in the area.
I was trying to go to my classes, but sometimes they'll cancel and be like, oh, we're going to do it over Zoom. And then I just hated Zoom so much from high school. And so I wouldn't even go.
Coldsmith was also worried about the loans he and his parents were taking out. His first semester of tuition and living on campus cost about $10,000. And paying for classes he didn't even like didn't seem like a good investment. So he left, worked with AmeriCorps, and now has a job with a nonprofit planting trees around Baltimore. He makes $15.50 an hour and lives at home to reduce his expenses. He loves the work, even though it doesn't come with a plan.
I feel like there's more, but I don't know where right now.
Coldsmith says if people know why they're going to college, it makes sense to go. Otherwise, it's good to try something else first. A break for a group that had their high school experience broken too. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, in which I will remind you that the official definition of a recession in this country is not, repeat, not two consecutive quarters of a shrinking economy. We can get into the details another time. Happy to do that. But I mention it because Germany's Federal Statistics Office announced today that that economy, the biggest in Europe, has now had those two consecutive quarters of negative growth. And whatever you want to officially call it, that is not great news. Okay, here is your moment of economic context on the way out. We talked about NVIDIA yesterday. I mentioned them in the numbers. Matt Levin's story about how AI is really helping out the chip design company. Well, here's a metric. The huge jump in its shares after the close yesterday and during the regular session today, again, 24% to the good. Put that company this close to $1 trillion in market capitalization. John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Amir Bibawi is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.